Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv S. Khanna for immigration.com, the Law Offices of Rajiv S. Khanna, PC. This is a free community conference call for July 5th, 2012. By participating in this call, you do not become our clients, nor we become your lawyers. This is just for information. Note that this call is being recorded and that this will be made publicly available. So if you wish to ask any follow-up questions or any new questions, you may want to conceal your identity. With that said, let me begin with the questions that have already been posted on the portals, which is on forums.immigration.com. We have a thread that is opened just to post questions for the conference call before the conference call, a couple of days before the conference call. So these are the questions we have. The first one is from RKata2011, one of the registered users. If H-1 extension is applied, receipt number has not been given yet, it's taking 60 days, but let's say 20, 25 days later the I-94 expires, is it good, am I okay to stay and work? And the answer is yes. As long as USCIS receives your filing, properly filed case of H-1 extension, before your I-94 expires, which it did, you can continue working up to 240 days, almost 8 months, or if there is a denial, until the date of denial, whichever is earlier. So if they deny the case in 3rd month, heaven forbid, you have to stop working. But if they haven't decided the case in 6 months, you can continue working. So 240 days. Next question is from Hardik Guru, who says about a J-1 waiver. He had been on a J-1 for 6 months in 2011, currently outside USA, serving the J-1 HRR period, the home residency requirement period. But in June, he's coming back to start a degree on F-1. Note this, guys, when somebody has a J-1 home residency requirement, they cannot get an HL or green card, but they can get visas like tourist visas and F-1 visas and even O-1 visa. Okay, so reaching USA, then he's going to apply for an HRR waiver so that he can ultimately convert to an H-1. The questions are, can you explain the process of J-1 HRR? Well, all this basic information is actually on our website as well as the State Department website. I'm not going to go into the very basics of how an HRR is started and how it is completed. All that information is publicly available fairly easily. The idea here is that you start with the case number with the State Department, then you contact your consulate. You start the paperwork with the consulate. If you are doing your waiver through no objection, because waiver can come through 4 different categories, no objection, extreme and exceptional hardship of some kind to your U.S. citizen or green card holding spouse or child. Remember, your hardship doesn't matter. The hardship must be to the U.S. immigrant or citizen, child or spouse. So one is no objection. Second is hardship. Third is a political asylum type where you have fear of life or limb if you were to go back to your home country because of your particular social membership, membership in a particular organization, social group, etc. So that's the third kind. And the fourth kind is based upon request of a federal government agency. Most physicians go through this kind of waiver. So those are the basic types of waivers. Your university is based out of Rochester, New York. So will my consulate be there in Chicago? I have no clue. It appears reasonable. Any contact number or email, you've got to search on the web. After downloading and filling the forms for no objection, how and where should I get them notarized? The consular package tells you what you need to do, and they do have a notary public in every consulate. I got my J-1 visa stamping from Kolkata, but got my F1 from Mumbai. to which consulate should I send my no objection to return? I don't think you have to do any of that. You basically download, I think you need to go to travel.state.gov, http://travel.state.gov. Open a case with the State Department, read the instructions on what you need to do and take it from there. Okay? Last question is, what should be the statement of reason when filing the HRR waiver? The answer is the truth. Can I quote some examples? No, there are no examples, but normally what we look for is, we look for indications in the statement whether or not the person who is giving the statement had a preconceived intention of converting to non-J1 status, or whether they change their mind later on. So in other words, if somebody enters USA on J1 with a preconceived intention of staying here, the State Department can take an objection to that. But if your mind changed later on, they might be okay with that. But don't make things up. Whatever the truth is, that's what you got to stick with. Sabah 303 says, how to maintain a green card. Got my green card in June 2010, sponsored by my daughter, along with my wife. One of the conditions is to file income tax return. My lawyer advised me, since that I'm 65 years plus, with no income, I'm not required to file tax returns. You see, as far as I know, sir, there is no requirement that you have to file tax returns if you're not required under general law to file. The only thing that the law says, as I recall, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, anybody who hears this, the law says you must not file tax returns in the U.S. as a non-resident. It doesn't say you have to file tax returns. It merely says if you do file, then don't file it as a non-resident. I don't think you should have a problem if you're not required to file a tax return. Next question is from Zach Hassett. Company bought pending 485. Look, when a company gets bought out, when your 485 has been pending more than 180 days and your I-140 is approved, my first inclination is to look for AC-21. Because if AC-21 is applicable, the jobs are similar, then that keeps the matters the cleanest. Otherwise, if it is a successor in interest, you have to do an I-140 amendment, and that in the current environment is always troublesome, because USCIS can come up with some pretty bizarre arguments to try to deny I-140s. So if AC-21 is applicable and the job duties are similar or same, I think AC-21 makes sense. Does Company B need to do something about my 485 application? I think if you are changing lawyers, you need to let your lawyers know to file their, of course they would know, to file their appearance. But if you're keeping the same lawyer, you should sit down with them, see if AC-21 makes sense. And if I were you, I would probably file an AC-21 letter. Okay? I have a lot of information on AC-21 on my blogs, so you can go take a look and that'll give you a good idea of what happens in AC-21. Next question is Ajax108. Question about H-1B after a gap of 1 year. Was on H-1B for the last 8 years. Came to India in July 2011 and since been there. Supposed to file a new H-1B but missed the deadline. Now I have an option. I can come on F-1 or I can come on my old H-1B because there is a labor cert through a company based upon which an extension can be filed. Will I be able, if I use any one of these options, will I be eligible to file H-1B visa in the new quota? Absolutely. No question about that. So once you've been outside USA for 1 year, you're entitled to 6 years again. And if you re-enter using H-1B or F-1, you're entitled to the 6 years. But there is something called remainder option. Make sure you discuss with your H-1 lawyers the remainder option. If you are coming to USA avoiding the quota, because there may be a possibility that you can try to avoid the quota by using the remainder option. It's a little gray area when it comes to extensions beyond 6 years. I've talked about this quite often, and I'll give you a hint. it's really something you need to discuss with your lawyers who do the H-1. What happens is, let's say I have come to USA on H-1, and I have been here for 1 year. After 1 year, I leave, okay? And I've been outside USA for 1 year now. I have two options at that point of time. Either I can be subject to the quota and get my 6 years back because I've been outside for 1 year. Or I can petition USCIS to be exempt from the quota and take only the remainder of the original 6 years, which is 5 years. I'm making it very generic and general, but essentially that's the idea. So remainder option says, don't be subject to the quota and take remainder, or be subject to the quota and take all 6 years if you've been outside USA for 1 year. So your last comment was, can I file for a new H-1B based upon being outside for 1 year? Absolutely. Or can I use that 1 year stay outside USA at a later stage for filing a new H-1B visa? You can. See, once you've done your one year outside, even if you re-enter USA on F-1 and you stay on F-1 for the next 3 years, you have 6 years of H-1, as far as I know, because the quota has been reset, your time has been reset. So I think that's your question. So it's no problem. You can use it anytime in the future. Prasad 121 talks about H-1B extension. I got my labor, like to apply for I-140, complete my 5 years of H-1B. Current visa, and I assume you're saying current status, expires in 2 months and has, and you have to apply for 6 year H-1B extension. Okay. If I apply for my H-1 extension without I-140, I will only get 1 year. No, you should get, I don't know when your labor cert was filed. If your labor cert was filed more than a year ago, or will be a year, in about 6 months or so when you apply for H-1, you could get 2 years. 1 year remaining on your current H-1 and 1 year coming from labor cert having been pending 1 year. So you could potentially get 2 years. Would it be helpful to apply for my 6 year H-1B extension with I-140 approval? Sure, if the I-140 gets approved, you can get 3 years extension. So if you have only 2 months left, I wouldn't do that. I would just do... I would probably just file for the H-1 extension because you'll be cutting it too close, you know. I would just file for the H-1 extension. Next question is SWE-82. On H-1, starting new job on EAD and I-9. So this person is on H-1, entered USA in advance parole. That doesn't matter. You're still on H-1. The start date of new job is August 15th. They want me to submit I-9. Well, first of all, merely by submitting I-9, you do not become subject, you do not get taken out of the H-1. So in my view, there is no harm in doing that. Okay. Your questions are, since I am still working on H-1 with my current employer, will I be on EAD as soon as I file the I-9? I don't believe so. I think you will be on EAD when you actually start working. That is my understanding of the law. Once I'm on EAD, can I work for two jobs? Absolutely. Absolutely. Only thing I ask you to make sure about is that you discuss with your lawyers which company you are getting the green card through, which is the company through whom you're getting the green card. Because with them, you should try to have a permanent full-time job. You can do as many part-time jobs on the side as you like. Question on LCA. Prasad 129 again. My friend is on H-1B. She was working remotely from home from client A. Now she's got a project with client B as well. Is it legal to work for two clients from two different states through same employer full-time and part-time? Well, first of all, there are several sub-issues here. When you work from home, which location should you file your LCA from? My opinion, you should file LCA that covers both the client site as well as the home site. So if you're working from Washington, D.C. for a client in California, your LCA should cover both Washington, D.C. and California. And as I recall, there was a comment from the Department of Labor, although the regulations are not quite clear on this, Department of Labor would like to see you post the LCA at the client site in California. So when you have two clients and third home site, I think you should have three LCAs. And the LCAs should be posted in both client sites. That covers one part, the LCA part. The other part, which is also interesting, is what, my H-1 is approved for 40 hours. Can I work 60? Well, if you're working for two clients, I would very strongly recommend an H-1B amendment to reflect the two clients. Okay? Reasonable mind can differ about this. Some other people might not think what I'm saying is correct, but in my view, that's the better way to do it. Okay? If you move home addresses, does she have to apply for a new LCA? I usually would. If the move is within a few miles, less than 40, 50 miles from the original location, I would probably just file an LCA, not an H-1B amendment. So, but again, discuss it with her lawyers. I'm not sure exact circumstances of her case and how the placement of the facts in her particular case is. But generally speaking, if I have a home-based client and they move within 30, 40 miles, if everything else is okay, I would not file an H-1B amendment. I just do a new LCA. She has to apply for her H-1B extension in 2 months. Is it okay to apply for extension just with client B as she's working full-time with them? See, again, before she starts working for client B, I think she should file an H-1B amendment, and she can combine amendment and extension in the same application, okay? VNMK wants to retain green card processing while working in India for a U.S. firm. One firm is interested in H-1 transfer, the other one will do only AC-21. H-1 transfer to the new multinational company, is that feasible? So he wants to work with some other company while retaining the green card processing with the current company. The answer is it is possible, but it's highly questionable. In my mind, if you have the desire and the intention of working with an employer full-time on a permanent basis, which is your green card application, why would you in the interim go and join another employer? That does not make sense. So is it legally possible? Yes. Is it legally advisable? Probably not, but I don't know the exact case. I don't know what your facts are. If you indeed have a genuine intention to join them and a good explanation why you have quit and joined another company in the meantime, you should be fine. Okay? So do I have to visit USA every year? You have to have an advanced parole that does not expire. Okay. As I'm on H-1B, is it enough to visit the country before the H-1 expiry? That's a very, very dicey situation. I would have to look at the law very carefully because, you know, laws can be very complex. One of the things that I would worry about is my H-1 is with one company. My green card is with another company. Anything in the INS, USCIS regulations or statements of public policy that say that I can't do this or has any effect, I think there is nothing, but, you know, that's not something you can take a chance with. You've got to get this research, make sure somebody looks at this very carefully. So if I were you, for now, I would assume that I've got to have an AP at all times. Number two option is AC-21, no H-1. AC-21 to new company, then work in India and Indian payroll. Again, the problem here is you've got to keep your advanced parole alive, otherwise your 485 is gone. Okay? And also, if I were USCIS, I would like to know why are you working for some other company or why are you working outside USA, not at the job which you want to take up permanently. Okay? So, you already have lawyers on this. I think you need to sit down with them. This is not a situation where you should make a hasty decision. I think this needs to be considered very, very carefully. there are too many ways things can go wrong, and you're so close to getting your green card, you may want to be very, very careful with this. Okay, folks, these are the questions that had been posted. Let me see if anybody has any follow-up questions. We've got a bunch of people. First of all, guys, anybody who has a question that's a follow-up on what I've just talked about, press 5-star on your phone. Press 5-star on your phone. Follow-ups only. Once I'm done with the follow-ups, then we'll start taking new questions, if there are any new questions. 5-star. So far, I have only one follow-up question. Two. Okay. I'm going to start with three. I'm going to start with in the order that people logged in, according to the time they logged in. So, first question is from area code 732. 732, go ahead, please. I can hear you. 732-322, go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Rajiv. This is regarding the question posted by Prasad 121.
Remind me what the content of the question is.
Regarding the I-140 and H-1 extension. He got labor approved after 1 year with the audit processing, and now he has to apply for extension, H-1B extension.
Right. So he's got 5 years done and he's got 6th year coming.
Yeah.
So he's entitled to 2 years anyway, because 1 year based upon labor cert having been filed more than a year ago, 1 year remaining on his H-1 already, 2 years, plus any time that he has spent outside USA, he can get back also.
Oh, okay. So he can just go for a regular extension process without applying for I-140 premium or anything as of now?
Absolutely. Absolutely. No question about that.
Okay, that clears. And one more thing about that LCA thing. I'm just not clear on that part.
It's a complicated situation. I'll give you the bottom lines again, but you can listen to the recording. Ultimately, it's your lawyers who have to decide this. Anybody who works from home, and their client is more than 40, 50 miles away, they should do an LCA, one from home, one for home and one for employer.
Okay.
Let me rephrase that. Client. Sorry.
Okay.
So let's say you're living in Washington, D.C. Your client is in California.
Okay.
You should have one LCA for Washington, D.C., your home, and one LCA for California.
Okay.
LCA posting must be done at the client site.
Okay.
So if you change, and let's say you want to add another client. Now this client is Chicago. Now, in my view, you will do an H-1B amendment.
Okay.
Along with, this time you'll have three LCAs. One for Chicago, one for California, one for Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, so that is legal to work for two different clients on single H-1? Is that legal in first case?
You are working for an end client. Your employer remains one. So you could be working for 50 different end clients as long as your employer remains the same. And your LCA should cover the location.
Okay. Yeah, that was my question, because while applying for H-1 extension now, would it be a problematic if there will be like multiple clients working on the full-time and part-time?
I don't think so, as long as you can get letters from the end clients, what is needed these days. So I don't think that should be a problem.
Okay. Yeah, that's it. Thanks, Rajiv.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, let me go on to the next call. Area code 954. Go ahead, please, 954. It could be outside USA. I can't tell. 95. Yeah, it could be outside USA. Can you say hello if you raised your hand, sir? Anybody, ma'am? Say hello if you raised your hand, if you pressed 5-star. Okay, I don't know who this person is. I'll leave the line open if you can hear me, you can talk to me. Okay, the last person who wanted to talk is area code 678. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Rajiv. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
Hey, this is Dharmesh. Actually, my question is about the H-1B denial. I am on OPT extension right now, and my OPT extension...
Hang on one second. Is yours a new question, or have you posted on the forum?
I haven't posted it.
Okay, I just... Give me one second. Let me make sure. I don't think we have anybody with pending questions. Anybody who has a pending question from people who's posted, press 5-star. Okay, we'll start with the new questions. Anybody who has new questions can press 5-star on your phone. Okay, Dharmesh, I think you are the last person who has a question. Nobody else seems to have one. Go ahead.
Okay, Rajiv.
There's one more question.
So I'm an OPT extension right now, and my OPT will be expired tomorrow. And my client applied for H-1B, and I saw on the USCIS website the day before yesterday, and I got the denial. So my question is, like, can I appeal for that denial?
You can, but the appeal takes a long time, and appeals hardly ever succeed, and the appeal gives you no right to live in the U.S.
Okay, so, like, for that, there's only one option. Should I get the admission?
I can tell you generically, since I don't know what the issue is. Generically speaking, when I have a quota case in which there is a denial, I typically tend to do both a new H-1. Well, I'm sorry. I tend to do, if there's no quota remaining, I have no choice but to do an MTR, a motion to reopen or an appeal, because there's no quota.
Okay.
So you may not have a choice other than an appeal MTR option. So your lawyers can help you decide. See, if it's a minor issue, I still like doing appeal better than MTR. So quota
issue... that's the different things? Appeal and MTR is the different things?
Yeah, I think it's an important point for everybody to understand. Let me explain what it means. By the way, I see three other hands up, so we have plenty of time, no problem. I'll cover everybody's questions. But this is important for everybody in the community to understand. What is the difference between an appeal and an MTR? A lot of people talk about it, but very few people quite understand how it works. First of all, what is an MTR, motion to reconsider or motion to reopen? They are both slightly different, but the idea is the same. The idea is that you're asking that government officer who first decided your application against you to reconsider, reopen the case, and think about it again. So it's a request to the same officer, correct? With
okay.
me so far? So an MTR yeah. is a request to the same officer. An appeal, on the other hand, is a request to the higher officer or the higher agency, which is in benefits application, it's Administrative Appeals Office, also known as, it used to be known as Administrative Appeals Unit, so AAO or AAU. Okay? So when you go to the higher body, it's an appeal. When you go to the same guy, it's an MTR. Legally speaking, it does not matter whether you have filed an MTR or an appeal. Usually you have no right to stay or work in USA.
Okay.
One exception, if you have filed an appeal against an I-140 denial, you can keep getting H-1 extensions while the appeal is pending. MTR gives you no such right. Why do I prefer appeal over MTR in these kind of cases? This is the reason. When you file an appeal, the appeal still goes back to the same officer who decided the case against you. You don't file the appeal with the higher body directly. You file it with the same officer. That officer then looks at the case again and decides if he wants to change his mind. In other words, MTR is automatically included in the appeal. You see my point?
Yeah.
But this is a better way to have the officer review it, because human psychology is, if I know somebody else is going to look at my work, I'll be more careful.
Yep.
Therefore, in your case, an appeal is the only option that I see. However, keep in mind that the appeal does not give you any right to live in U.S.
Okay.
So you have to make sure that you don't run into that 180-day unlawful presence problem. Discuss that specifically with your lawyer.
So it should be like after denial, my OPT will be expired tomorrow, right? So I do have 180 days?
No, you don't have 180 days. you got technically you're deportable once your time period is over. You have OPT plus 60 days to leave. Okay. After that, you are deportable. But if you stay for 180 days, you don't have any permanent damage unless you are actually deported.
Okay.
You are deportable, but there's no automatically permanent damaging happening. 180-day rule, you have automatic damage, you can't come back for 3 years.
Oh, okay.
Unlawful presence, can't come back for 3 years. So the difference is, once again, it is not that you are allowed to stay. It is that there is no permanent damage to you.
Okay.
Okay?
Yep.
So
thanks,
that's
Raju.
The way you go. Good luck to you.
Yeah, thanks, Raju.
You're welcome, sir. Bye-bye. Okay, let me open the next question. Again, area code 732. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Raju.
Yes, I can hear you.
Hi, Raju. Thanks for taking my call. Okay, I have a couple of questions regarding my labor certification, which was filed last November, okay? As luck would have it, it's gone for an audit for the second time, actually. Same audit is same firm has been audited for the second time for a totally different reason.
Very unusual, but it can happen.
Yeah, so my question was, we submitted another response, I guess, like a couple of weeks ago. My company submitted a response. Do you know how long does it generally take? I mean, is there any? I know there is no fixed time frame with these people, the USCIS. In general,
I am sorry. I cannot give you a definitive answer. I can ask some of the people here. Give me 1 second.
Right.
I'm on a cordless phone, so I can walk over to some of my colleagues. Any idea how long for our audit responses? Once the audit is submitted?
It takes between, sometimes it's 2 months, but up to 6 to 8 months.
2 to 8 months, one estimate. Okay, guys, what is our experience with the response to audit? Once we have submitted the response, decision, the estimate I have is 2 to 8 months. Any of you think?
Right.
3 months? No, just give me a general response. What is our experience? I'll go with 2 to 8 months. That looks like something everybody is more or less comfortable with.
Right.
So
it's like it's much better than what it was like a couple of years ago.
Like a year and a half. No, that is better. It's much better than that. Sure.
Right. So I was just thinking, like, you know, I also read, I think somewhere on your forum that. There is actually a formal service request that can be raised if, you know, it's not answered within some certain time period.
There is something like that. Let me get back to. I'm sorry. I'm gonna have to walk back to the people who do all the work here.
Thank you.
That's my job. Heather, what was the if it goes over the time period? What is my? Do we send in a request to the Department of Labor? What do we do? We email them. We do email them. We do call them, but usually it takes whatever time it takes. There's really no process to expedite.
I guess, you know, audit for the second time, I guess, is not very common. I couldn't find
the I remember at least one case in the last 5 years where we had a second audit, but that's the only case I remember. I don't think
this is
very common.
Right. I don't know what they're doing for the first time when they actually looked at my application, but that's another thing.
Well,
hey,
they're showing you some special love, I hope.
They like my case, I guess. I don't know. Anyway,
the second audit
was actually was regarding the location. Actually, my location is different from the company headquarter location or whatever, something like that.
Yeah, they must have noticed that, and I hope that your labor certification says that you can be relocated.
Actually, no, but then my company said that I would be working at the headquarters after it's approved, something like that. So
yeah, that's
that
okay. That's a reasonable explanation as well. The idea is, today you are working in Washington, D.C., but our headquarters in California. Once the green card gets approved, before that, you will be located back to California. I think that's okay, yeah?
Whichever way, if the language is supported, it should be good enough, right? So I think so,
but I don't know. See, I'm just giving you general idea.
Right.
So, yeah, it should work. I mean, that's legally feasible, definitely.
Okay, all fine, right. Thanks. I just
good luck. All right, bye-bye. Okay, I have two more questions, two more hands raised that I see. Give me 1 second, guys. Having a little technical issues here. Okay, 954-514. Can you hear me? 954-514. Okay, for some reason you can't hear me. All right, last question is from area code 312. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Rajiv. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, I'm Kumar here. I have a question regarding the, you know, OPD extension, cab gap extension. So basically, I came here on F1, and I'm currently in cab gap extension from this month, the 15th till September 30th. I got my H-1B approved, petition approved, basically, which was filed on April from October 1st.
Okay.
So I got married on April and came back on F1 OPT and applied the H-1B. So currently my F1 visa is expired and my EAD is expiring in like another 4 days or so, but still I'm in cab gap extension. My question is, my wife, she is in India, and she would like to come over this month. So I would like to know if F2 visa is the best thing or H4 visa is the best thing to have her this month.
It's an interesting situation. I prefer the H-4 visa for many, many different reasons. Okay?
Okay.
But the problem is, with H-4, she can't come right now. She can only come closer to October. So if she wants to come right now and she just has to, then F-2 is your only option.
Right, exactly. I read through your forum too, and you suggested, like, since they give the visa, it will be like 10 days before September 21st or something is the latest date.
Correct.
She can travel.
Correct.
But is it like, I mean, I see it that it's for H-1B, but I understand that the primary dependent is on H-1 only from October 1st, so she can't travel before that. But is there a rule, basically, that if she enters before that, will it be an issue, or they won't let her enter?
When you say enter, I'm assuming that she has obtained some visa, right? How can she enter?
Right, exactly.
It's not really whether or not they will let her enter. The first question is, what visa will she try to enter on?
Exactly. So, she has two options, as you mentioned, F2 and H4. But, like, you know, since I was, like, considering by this month, I was preferring F2. But, unfortunately, my, F2 visa is expired, too, and EAD is expiring, too. It's almost expired when she probably goes for interview. So will it be an issue or chances of getting F2?
You can try. Look, as long as you don't play any games with the consulate, technically speaking, because of the cap back gap, you're still on F1 status. After all, what is cap gap? It says we'll extend your status hypothetically to October 1st. So theoretically, at least, applying for an F2 visa should not be a problem, right?
Okay.
So as long as you don't make any misrepresentations to the government, which I'm sure you're not going to. But as long as you keep it straight and honest, if they deny the F2 for the duration being too short or for any other reason, that will not then become an impediment to her H4.
Okay, that is not going
on. What I'm thinking is, let her go ahead and try F2 if she wants to. If you guys are in such a big hurry, whatever your reasons are, I'm not fighting the reasons. Whatever your reasons are, if that is what you want to do, as long as you are honest about answering all asked questions, I don't see any problem with her getting an F2. And if there's a denial, then just getting an H4 later on.
Okay. That is not going to affect the H4, and I can do it right immediately too, right? There is no, like, a minimum duration record or anything.
It's kind of interesting because there is a, you know, law can be such a pain in the behind sometimes because there are no easy answers. Even when she goes for an H4, the government, U.S. consulate can insist that you must go get an H1 visa stamp first. They all don't always do that, but occasionally they'll come up with this. They'll say, we won't consider an H4 until you get the H1 visa stamping done. Then what do you do?
Yeah.
You go to Canada or Mexico and go get your H1 visa stamping.
Is there a rule, like, just with the approval notice which I send, I-797, she can't get the H-4 visa?
There is no rule like that. I know plenty of cases where people got their H-4 visa stamping without the principal applicant having obtained an H-1 visa. But I also know cases where inexplicably, without any explanation, U.S. Consulates insisted, no, he must get a H-1 visa stamping first. So I don't think it's going to be a problem, but keep this in the back of your mind also. I can't really predict how it's going to play out, but that's definitely one of the things you need to think about.
Sure. So as you suggested, I would just go for the F2 right now at this point, since I would like to cover this one. But is there any advice or suggestion you would give, like, based, like, you know, as you said, it's just 3 months, and the F2 is, like, more chances of they would consider as an immigrant rather than H-4 visa?
No, the advice that I can only give is the same advice that the great seal of India has, Satyamev Jayate. Make sure that you tell the truth.
Sure, that is for sure. But apart from that, like, by documentation purpose or something, to make my case more stronger, like, you know, since it's 2 months, I really understand that.
I don't think you can do any.
Okay. Sure, Rajiv, that's my question on it. I guess I'll go and try. Thank you for it.
Good luck to you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Rajiv.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye.
Hi, guys. Thank you, everybody, for being here, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Bye.